Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads, a podcast where I discuss various books that I read through the week and what I thought about them, and I rank them based on my opinions, which are very different from other opinions, which everybody should have their own opinions. And don't let anybody tell you that this book sucks and you shouldn't like it. Fuck them. You like what you like, and fuck all those haters. You are different than everybody else, and everybody else is different than you. And everybody has different experiences and different likes and dislikes. And that's for you. You shouldn't let anybody tell you something or feel guilty about anything or make it say, "Well, this is my guilty pleasure." Fuck that. That's not a guilty pleasure. It makes you happy. You read the goddamn thing and be happy. Don't let these motherfuckers on media or podcasts or bloggers or anything make you feel bad for liking something that you enjoy. Fuck 'em. So having said that, yeah, there was a lot of angry people again on the interwebs about Dark Knight Returns 3, the Frank Miller Brian Azzarello book. First, it was because everybody hated the Frank Miller art of Superman. And now it's the damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's like Frank Miller isn't really involved too much with the book. He gave his blessing, and Azzarello's doing it. And he said he would like to do the fourth one. Who cares? Just read it and enjoy it. Come on. I mean, I just get sick of the whining. But I'm going to whine a little bit. Why does everybody feel they have to fucking tell all the fucking spoilers on social media to a show that just fucking showed up, like Jessica Jones? God damn. Not everybody has fucking, 13 hours to fucking absorb all these goddamn shows in one sitting. That's fucking ridiculous. I just hate spoilers. Like, I just finished Daredevil, and I managed to avoid major spoilers just by ignoring social media, but man, it's sometimes hard when there's pictures and shit and you're scrolling through your feed. I almost can't even scroll through my feed anymore, and I kind of have to make lists of people that I know are not gonna spoil me, and those are the people that I keep looking for in social media, but man, it's just bad. It's so bad. And I lost all the episodes of Flash and Arrow and everything because we lost the DVR. And I know I could go on to Hulu and subscribe, but then there's more money, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it, or if I'll just wait till next season when Netflix releases them. That's how I originally watched the first season of Arrow and then got caught up. So yeah, I'm not sure what I'm gonna do about those, but a lot of the other ones I can get on demand, DirecTV on demand, and see Walking Dead, and some of them I was already caught up on, so it's not a big deal. Gotta figure out how to watch The Strain, the last two episodes, because I was really enjoying that. I want to see how that finishes. But now on to comics. The list is as follows. Again, the ratings, I use the Netflix ratings. I like Netflix quite a bit. This is the week for November 9th through November 15th. And 5 is I love it, 4 is I really like it, 3 is I like it, 2 is I did not like it, 1 is I hated it. So there were no 2s, so that's good. That means I liked everything. And this is the breakdown. I read 40 comics, which is pretty good. I'd like to average 50, because then it's like if I don't get 50 or higher, then it means I'm intaking more than I'm consuming, and that's not a good thing. But it does give you quite a library stock of books to read, and I did focus on a lot of old stuff, older stuff, not really old stuff, older stuff, just because I read what strikes the mood, and sometimes my mood just swings dramatically. I've been on a Marvel kick, and now I'm switching off the Marvel kick, and I wanted to read some old stuff. So it doesn't help with the new pile of books, but I guess it piles with the books that I bought in back issues and have accumulated, and I still need to read. So we had 40 books. We had six Valiant. That was a pretty good turnout for Valiant the week. Marvel, nine. Still read quite a bit of those. Image, I've been light on the indies lately. Image, I got five. IDW, I got two. DC, I got 17. 451 Media, I got one. So we start at the bottom, and this is the three out of fives. I got Shrinking Man on IDW. Really an intriguing series and a roller coaster of intrigue. There was aspects to the story that I really hated. This is based on the novel, and then there were aspects to the story that I like really liked. And this one, this final issue came in the middle because it had it to me a really ambiguous ending. Like, it's one of those endings where you could take it so many different ways, and sometimes that's awesome. But in this case, I wanted to see at least what was happening, and maybe it was there some wording I missed or something. But it seemed like a very ambiguous ending, and that's the only reason I dropped it. Like, there was times where Shrinking Man was a 4 out of 5, and there were times where it was a 3 out of 5, and I think I even rated one a 2 out of 5. But I probably not. I think the lowest I rated it was a 3 out of 5. That one where he was driving his somebody picked him up, like this child molester. It was so weird. It was very disturbing. Is issue two, because he was shrinking and he thought he was a child and started grabbing his knees and stuff. It was just weird. That was a very weird book to read. And then three was amazing because he went to the circus and fell in love with another woman because his wife can't be with him anymore, and he fell in love with one of those circus show people that was part of their freak show, and it was like Tom Thumb's ex-wife or something, and that got really interesting. And I really wanted to see what in the fourth one was happening between him and his family, other than him shrinking down to nothingness and defeating the spider. But it was interesting. That's all I have to say. I'd recommend it if you were ever interested in the book. So the next one is Gangland, which was an anthology of gang stories. This was an older book that I read from DC Vertigo, and it was good. It had four stories, if I remember. It was kind of like a smaller, well, bigger than a regular comic, but smaller than an annual. It had four stories of them. I thought they were all pretty decent. They're crime noir stories in Vertigo, which I tend to enjoy. I think I like the first one and the second one. Let's see who wrote those, because I don't remember. Really cool cover where this guy's like taking a shit in the stall and he's kind of wondering what's happening in the stall next to him, and you just know there's a dead guy there. But this had a Brian Azzarello story. Brian Azzarello, which we kind of talked about, is writing the new Dark Knight Master Race series. Dave Gibbons, let's see, Dussel Young and Peter Cooper. I remember liking the Brian Azzarello story. And it had a good art. There was a Dave Gibbons art, Frank Quietly art. That was really good. Tim Bradstreet. It was pretty good. It's a four-issue anthology. There is a trade if you're interested, and it was from 1998. Four stories, like I said. There was two of them that were really good, and two of them that were okay. But I've kind of based it as a whole. Like, there was a couple stories I'd say were 4 out of 5, and some were 3 out of 5. And I looked at it as a whole property of the whole book, and I ended up rating it a 3 out of 5. Then we have Ascend. This is a a video game type story. It's not based on a property, it's based on just the genre. And it is written by an artist. Sometimes you see artists tap into their writing skills and start telling stories. And this is Shane Davis. I tend to like his art quite a bit. It was from Image Comics, and it just came out recently. Issues 1 and 2 are out. Really good covers, really striking covers that would make you want to potentially pick these books up. I got the cover A's, there's cover B's as well. And I am going to be along with the ride on this one, but there was so much to like and so much not to like, and it kind of met me in the middle. I really like the art presentation. I really liked his storytelling word-wise, like as far as like what he was trying to establish. I liked when he the main character was the main characters were grounded in reality, and when they turned over into the video game world, I wasn't crazy about it. It was just like jarring. It was like different. And maybe it's because I'm not a gamer. It could be that I just don't get that. Maybe the gaming part would click, like when they're inside the video game, like a Tron world type thing. Maybe when they're in there, and they seem to be like in a Tron world, but manifesting themselves in the real world. It's very bizarre. But I liked all the backstories of the two characters that they introduced, and I liked when they were grounded, and then I wasn't so crazy about when they manifested powers inside of the video game world. But I'm in the middle of the road. I am gonna complete it. I've already pre-ordered a lot of it, and I will check it out. And the art, I really did enjoy. I really thought the layouts were great. I thought the It was pleasing to my eyes anyway. But I do like Shane Davis, so maybe somebody that doesn't would not like this unless they like the writing. So then we got GLA Classified. Okay, I'm going to talk about two story arcs. One of them was the wrap up with Gail Simone and Garcia Lopez, which I thought was an amazing arc, and that one's not this. And then there was a Justice League Detroit run. Let me see who wrote that one. Just JLA Classified. It'll probably not come up. The Detroit one was written by Steve Englehart with art by Tom Derenick. And it was Justice League Detroit. And it was a weird story. This is the ones that I'm going to talk about right now. This was this was issues 22 through 25, 4-issue arc. It featured Justice League Detroit, which a lot of people shit on, but I was a fan. I like when Justice League changes, and I don't mind when they're not major characters, and this was an odd group of characters. So the only big hitters you had were Aquaman and Zatanna and Martian Manhunter. Martian Manhunter's pretty much been in almost every incarnation. He's the only like solid thread of the team. But the other ones were Vibe, who's a Chicano superhero, and talks like this, S.A. Chew, what you doing? And they like to write his accent very heavily. And lighthearted character, learning the ropes. And then you have Gypsy, who's also learning the ropes, but is very mysterious background. You learn a lot about the character in this one that I don't remember. Like, I don't know if some of this was retconned or whatever, but that was cool. And then Steel, who was kind of kidnapped by his grandfather and manipulated, and he's in constant pain. Like, it's all his joints were replaced by these steel unbreakable bones and shit. And just like when they replace your hip and your knees and stuff, it's not a natural feel in your body. And they constantly make it a point in this book to show that he's in constant pain. And then, so those are all fairly newcomers to the I think the most stable one, at least the one that's not mysterious, is Steele as far as contributing to the team. He's pretty consistent and knows what he needs to do. The other one that's like a veteran but not a veteran is Vixen, because she can hold her own. But this story arc was really fucking bizarre, and it talked about three incarnations of the what are they called? The Royal Flush Gang. And the first incarnation, it mostly dealt with the third, because the second were mostly robots. But so the Justice League decided to go on this camping trip, and it was just Martian Manhunter and the four rookies, and it was just to try to like flesh out their abilities, be in a calm environment, learn about each other, try to do some team building exercises and stuff like that. But it turned into a real nightmare because the first Royal Flush Gang decided that one of the guys was manipulated to believing that they had to go after the Justice League, and he felt like a failure because of all the defeats previously. And minus one member, they decided to attack the Justice League, so 4 against 5. And they have this luck machine that they got from Amos Fortune, and he wasn't part of this incarnation. I mean, he was originally, but not as they went to attack the Justice League. So they were short a member. And they used to call him Pudge because he was a little fat. But that's a side story. But they attacked him, and they have this luck machine and all these card weapons, and it seemed pretty vile. And they used a lot of fire against Martian Manhunter, who was their strength. And some of the rookies had to come through in this, but as they defeated the first incarnation, the second incarnation went the third sorry the third incarnation of the Royal Flush Gang with Amos Fortune went after the first one to destroy them, and they had their enhanced luck machine because he invented it. So he also wanted to go after them plus destroy the Justice League, and the story got really complex, but it was just fun. It was great to see the characters back that I enjoyed so much. And if you've read the series, you know that it doesn't end well for a couple of them. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed what they fleshed out with Gypsy too at the end. I thought it was worthwhile. Check it out if you're into the Justice League Detroit. That's JLA 22 through 25. And then I started reading the New 52's version of Teen Titans. We had talked about it briefly on DC Noise with me, Daryl, and Chris Campbell, and they're not too hot on it. And I tend to be more optimistic on things. And I enjoyed reading this story. I thought that the story and the action was really good. Where they're lacking is, like I agree with Daryl, is some of the magic of the Teen Titans is the fact that they're family. They're not like the Defenders, a dysfunctional group. They're a family, and they work well, and they have similar goals, and they have similar angst and stuff like that. But this group is more like the Defenders. They don't work well together, and you could see a lot more deconstruction of the team. And it's something in the New 52 that they haven't really seemed to. It seems like they're in a circle of hell. Like every time they try to get close to making it something that at least a lot of old time fans care for, they switch it back up and it ends up back where they started. And a lot of this is the Titans, breaking loose, and you get introduced to Star Labs, and I'll talk more about it as I am caught up on the series now. This was just 3 through 5, but they introduce Manchester Black, and if you're a Justice, a Morrison, Kelly Jones, not Kelly Jones, J Joe Kelly, person, you'll know that Joe Kelly contributed a lot to the Justice League Elite, and in this book, in the New 52, they introduce the Elite, not the Justice League Elite, but the Elite. And they even introduce Manchester Black, but it's like totally different from what we got in the pre-Flashpoint. And not in a good way, but it's in a competent way. It's in an interesting way, but it's not gonna ring bells with old time fans and say, "Oh, Manchester Black is a badass motherfucker. I really like him." Plus his sister and all the craziness of the Elite. The Elite turns out to be, well, we'll talk about that in later issues, but this Manchester Black is kind of like a lead scientist, very weird looking for a professional business like Star Labs. And it has Joshua Power, so if you're familiar with pre-52 continuity, you'll remember the comic book called The Power Company. So that they're in Star Labs, and it's pretty much Manchester Black trying to, as the heroes are looked well in social media, he's trying to gain their popularity and kind of recruit them. But Tim, being the person that he is, starts questioning some of his motives. So he's going along with it, like Manchester can help us, blah blah blah. But he always is questioning, like, what's his motive? What is he doing? You know, he's asking the right questions. But it's good. And then Monstrous is, we jump up to the 4 out of 5s. Monstrous from Image Comics. It was a thick fucking book for $4.99. It was probably like a $7.99 book if you like thick as like those Vertigo SFX books or the Vertigo color books. A lot of pages. And in my opinion, it's well worth the money, even though the art style was not my favorite, because I'm not huge into manga. Like, I've dipped my toes into it, and people suggest manga and anime to me all the time, and I just can't. It the aesthetic, the way it looks, the I just don't like it. I don't like reading backwards either. I don't know what it is. I just there's also like a weirdness to them, at least the ones that I've read, because they tend to be in what I enjoy, horror, sci-fi, and there's something about the appeal. But what Monstrous is about a world of humans and a world of kaiju. Kaiju's like Godzilla monsters and stuff like that. And there's a war between the humans and the kaiju. And in this case, some of the kaiju are sold off like slaves to the humans. And one of these real witch daughters of manages to get one of this the main characters, who seems like she's being captured on purpose, and the story lays out like that. And it's a really well told story. The story is by Marjorie Liu, and the art was by Sana Takada. And you know what? I liked it, and I'm gonna continue it. It's advertised as steampunk meets kaiju and the original fantasy epic for mature readers, and it is. There's nudity and violence. As young Micah risks everything to control her psychic leak with a monster of tremendous power, placing her in the center of a devastating war between human and otherworldly forces. So, yeah, I liked it. It just came out fairly recently. I'd recommend it for somebody that likes kaiju and those kind of things, and maybe even likes like anime types or manga styles, because the art is kind of reminiscent of that. You might like this. You might like it if you like horror, monsters, Planet of the Apes kind of things, where you have monster versus human. You know, you might enjoy that book. Star Trek Green Lantern number 4 is rated a 4 out of 5 from IDW. It continues to be very intriguing. The writer is doing a really good job with the Green Lantern property while maintaining the movie-like new Captain Kirk and Spock's personalities and the crews. It's really well-written, well-crafted story. That fits into the Blackest Night trilogy, if you will. Even though this is like an Elseworlds story, it could be a continuation of everything you read in Green Lantern, at least to the point where, you know, Sinestro War and Blackest Night ended. So, That was good. Wrath of Eternal Warrior, I read a preview copy number one, and I don't know if I was. I almost threw this into the 3 out of 5s. I don't know. It's well written, but I don't think it was a great first issue, and it really played on you reading Book of Death number 4. And I loved 1 through 3 and wasn't crazy about Book of Death number 4, but this was a decent read. I want to read it again. It went with a paper copy because the preview copy we get because I'm the Valiant podcast. So I want to read it when because I love paper. I hate digital. I don't know why it is. There's nothing I have against it. But it was by Robert Venditti and Rahl Allen. There were several covers, like a lot, and I just got the cover A. I don't get the alternate covers anymore. But I want to read it again. I might revisit it next week or the week after, now that I have a paper copy. But I was on the fence with this one. I almost rated it a 3, but then I was like, the writing is really strong. And even though I don't like the direction, I enjoyed what I read, so I gave it a 4 out of 5. The next one that I rated was, I skipped one. It was Book of Death, Fall of Harbinger. I rated this one a little lower than Wrath of Eternal Warrior. I just thought, for a, these are like what happens in many years to come, the Fall of the Harbingers, and this is written by Joshua Dysart, who's the mastermind behind Harbinger and Imperium, and kind of like all of the Harbinger kids. And I've really enjoyed. I think I rated 5 out of 5s for all the Fall of books, but this one didn't feel like it was up there to me, and it felt cold. Like the other ones felt like I understood the characters. I knew. I felt emotionally attached. This book, I felt detached, and I think it was just the finality of it and the big battle between Pete and Harada. I wasn't feeling it, but you can't really slam it because it is a well-told story. It just didn't have that binding that the other three did. So I rated it a little lower. The next one above was Death of Wolverine, the Logan Legacy. This is where you have a mysterious character. This leads into Wolverines, by the way. I finally wrapped up this story arc. You have like Sabretooth and Lady Deathstrike and Daken. You have X-23, and I think you have one other. But the point is that Logan's dead. And this person captures these characters and says, "I have a trigger word that will cause you for me to be able to control you." And another couple of people, and this crosses over kind of with the other Death of Wolverine series, A Weapon X. Two of those people come over and say, "We're here to help you. We know that this organization is going to try to control you. We will help you. We will give you the trigger words to help you. Do you trust us?" And they're kind of like, "Fuck no, we don't know who you are. You could be planted." And it's a pretty interesting finale that leads itself into Wolverines. I really enjoy it. It's Charles Soule. The art was really good. Next up, we got JSA Classified 18 and 19. I missed 17, which was bad. Because 17 and 18 was a two-parter with Hourman, the son. You got Rex and Rick, I believe. It's hard to remember the generations, but Rex is the main Hourman from Golden Age, and his son Rick came up in, I think, Infinity Inc. is where he was introduced, and he was introduced as a drug addict. And this was a time period where they got along as father and son, and Bane was put into this situation, and you don't know why they're helping Bane. And it sounds like they're allies at one point, but I missed the first issue, and Bane was like trying to obtain some Meralco or whatever it's called. That's the pill that he pops, which gives him 1 hour of strength and agility and abilities. And then he has to pop another pill, and that you could see the drug aspect to it. And you can also know that Bane had venom in his system, so you see some interesting contrast between the two. And turned out to be he was trying to take down the whole pharmaceutical company that they owned, and it was a really, really good story. I just wish I gotta dig up the first issue just to see how I got there. And then number 19 was the first parter of a Dr. Midnight story. Very interesting. To a DC completist, it's even more interesting because there's a lot of Z-lister characters, or D-lister, I guess you could call them, or E-lister. They're way down there. There was a lot of Bloodline characters, and a lot there was Power Company characters, really obscure characters. And what it had to do with is there is this guy or organization that is, and it had Roulette. So if you're a JSA fan, you liked Roulette, you know, the girl that does the betting and the Fight Club shit with the tattoo all the way down her leg and the red dress. If you're a fan of that, you're gonna really enjoy this book. And she's not the big bad. There's an organization that's actually stealing body parts of these people, and it's like got a horror aspect to it, like a torture thing to it, where they go in strategically looking for a liver or a heart or eyes or whatever, and they'll like go to like the Argus or whatever and take one of his fingers or arms or whatever, and you don't know why they're taking pieces, but somebody's paying for that piece, and they're gonna plant it in another person, and Dr. Midnight's trying to uncover that, and he has to go under, you know, take down Roulette. Even though he doesn't really take her down, he achieves his goal so he can get to the next step and try to go after this corporation stealing body parts from heroes from Power Company and some of the Bloodline heroes. Argus is in there, Loose Cannon. I mean, if you're a fan of this stuff, it's very, very interesting. But I got to read part two soon. I think this was from the 2006, 2007 era. Next is Sunflower number one. It's a 451 Media. They've had a pretty solid release across the board. This was the last one that I read. It's not the last one that they published. The last one they published is six. But it was the last of the first wave of books that they published. Sunflower is unique. I liked it. My co-host on Geek Brunch liked it but didn't like it. I think he's on the fence, and I don't think he'll buy the trade. I found it a little more interesting. It's about a woman that lost her family, and she gets a letter, a postcard, and it has her daughter's writing in it. So she believes that her child's alive, and she tries to go to the town where the one person she knows is behind their deaths lives and is in power, kind of like the guy from Roadhouse. If you remember the bad guy, the big bad in Roadhouse, he kind of owned the whole town. Well, that's what this guy, this bad guy that killed her daughter supposedly, and her husband is runs that town, and everybody's even scared to say his name, kind of like in Roadhouse. But Sunflower is interesting. It looks like she might have an ally, so we'll see how that turns out. 451 Media, 4 out of 5. Next one is Faster Than Light. This is Image Comics that I really enjoyed. Number one of it's what if we're in time now, and somebody discovered the technology to travel faster than light? What would that do? And this second issue deals with one of the things they do. You know, they launch a crew into space to look at some things, and they discover an alien being. And there's like alternative motives. You know that there's a Paul Reiser character in Aliens that has alternative motives for technology and stuff they find in space? Well, there's a character like this on this ship. But Faster Than Light, it's a really good book. Recommend it. From Image Comics. The next one I liked was Dark Knight Strikes Again. This was the Frank Miller book, and it deals with a lot, like you see a lot of the other characters, not just Batman. You know, Batman's got the new Catwoman, kind of like his Robin, and Adam and his wheelhouse, and then Superman is in love with Wonder Woman, and they kind of have a child and stuff, and there's some interesting, crazy stuff. And I really enjoy it, but I don't see all the hate for the new Frank Miller drawings because it's no different than this. It's no different than what you saw in 300. It's the same style, so I don't know if it's just people that just aren't aware of it and are comparing it to Cthulhu or what. What the fuck is going on? But it is a really good story, and I should be wrapping up number three soon. Really interesting stuff, and it looks like it's going to be a climax between Batman and Superman, which is cool because we have a movie coming out. And I saw the preview. Went to go see Hunger Games, the finale, which I really enjoyed. But they had the preview for Batman versus Superman, and it looks awesome. I mean, it really looks good, especially Wonder Woman, because I love Wonder Woman so much. Oh my God, just seeing her on the screen, it's worth the price of admission right there. Can't wait for her movie. I can't wait. So, Thor's 2 and 3. This is a detective procedural with the Thors. We kind of find out who the big bad is, and we'll see where that goes. Jason Aaron is a master at storytelling. He just is. No matter what he touches, he gets you interested. He gets me interested anyway. His the way he puts pen on paper, the words he puts together, it flows good in my brain, and I really like it. This has been a really good issue, a series. I still have one more to go, but two and three, really solid issues. I gave him a 4 out of 5, and then going up the list, we had JLA Classified number 19 through 21. This dealt with was the Gail Simone one I talked briefly about, and I've talked about in the past on Retrocast, and this was the finale between the Justice League fighting that general, and the general that got Amazo and Stario technologies and started using them against the Justice League. Plus, he's got protection from the United Nations and the United States, and they can't go after him, kind of like a diplomatic immunity bullshit kind of thing. That they can't go do anything about it without causing a. And he's releasing this virus that's killing, you know, a lot of people, and it's infected superheroes. And this is the climax. And on top of that, General also turns into like a monster, but he also recruits his own type league in China that have very similar compatible abilities to the Justice League that can at least fight them or fend them off. And that storyline just is interesting, really. As well, and had a really good climax. Really well told story. Hail Hydra actually went up for me because last week I told you I read all new Captain America, and I really started to get into the kid that Steve Rogers raised in Dimension Z, and that's what this story is, in an alternate reality where Hydra is in charge of one of their cities or that are in Battle World, and he's kind of part of the rebellion, you know, Black Widow and a couple others. But there's a lot of heroes that are infected, and they have their own like Avengers slash Justice League, and they all have like major characters like Venom, and they all have Hydra symbols on them, and the situation looks really dire, and I think this is going to be a really good finale to Hail Hydra. Rick Remender is another writer I really enjoy. Next one on the top 4 out of 5 book, which almost made it 5 out of 5, was a Western, and it's based on a Disney ride. It's Big Thunder Mountain Railroad number 3 and 4 by Dennis Hopeless, and it was such a fun Western, and it had the themes of the ride, especially towards issue 4. And it's a fast-paced train roller coaster, so if you get that, It was a really well-told story. I highly recommend it if you're a fan of the ride, or if you're a fan of like Jonah Hex and you're a fan of westerns. I think you'll also like Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. Now we get into the 5 out of 5s, and there were quite a bit. We got the finale to Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire. They introduce a new female character, and that's the focus of this whole series by Greg Rucka. Really enjoy this character. She's like an awesome fighter pilot. Such an interesting character. And they build her up through issues 1 through 4, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Next one is Book of Death, Fall of X-O-Man at War. This is an interesting fall of because, well, I don't want to spoil it. It's simplistic in its nature, and there's a handoff of capabilities, and there's a death, just like there were in the other death of. But it is really an amazing one, and if you like the legacy things, you'll like this book. Like if you like the legacies of Starman or the legacies of Robins or all the legacy of Hour Man that we just talked about, and then there's a robot Hour Man and so many good things. And I think you will dig Book of Death, Fall of X-O-Man of War by Venditti. And it was just a good, heartwarming story that led you. And they introduce a new character, which is key, because if you're into the Valiant universe, this new character, I think, is it's her first appearance. And really interesting character, like somebody I'd want to see more of. So that's X-O-Man of War, Fall of Mano. Sorry, Fall of X-O-Man of War, Book of Death. Jonah Hex, I read some of Volume 2. These were the single issues, really good stories. Number 4 and 5 of the second volume. This wasn't the All-Star Western from the New 52. I finished that. This is the older stuff from around 2006 by Palmiotti and Gray. And really, really cool stories. One of them is he's bringing in this guy for a bounty, and all these other people want him too. And it's just a really interesting story because it involves a father and a daughter, and it's really well told. And the other one I really enjoyed as well. So Jonah Hex is always like kind of done ones. Really good reads. The art is really good. I'd highly recommend Jonah Hex to anybody, any incarnation actually, even going back to his first incarnation. I really am a completist on it. At some point, I have finished all the volumes of Jonah Hex, like owning the books, but I still need like some of his All-Star Western, and I really am going to get it. Like it's one of the goals that I am going to achieve because I love the character so much. And then speaking of westerns, wow, there was three westerns in this one. That's awesome. 1872 was the wrap up to the Marvel Western. It's an Elseworld about like Marvel characters in the Wild West. Really great wrap up. Jerry Duggan, becoming one of my favorite Marvel writers. I starting to dig his stuff. I'm really feeling it. I'm just sad to see this book go. I know there's gonna be a Red Wolf book, but I think it's in placed in current time. So I hope they will revisit this world at some point, as I want to know. I want it more fleshed out. I want to know more because I find it so damn interesting. You got Batman Gotham Knights. This was from roughly the 2005 period, 2006. This was a Brian Bolland cover. He's doing awesome, covers at the time, and the art was by Roger Robinson, who's also a great artist. He draws very, very clean lines and very dynamic, in my opinion. And this one is issue 44, and it's no, this one's actually from 2003, so I'm off a couple of years. 3 years specifically, or 2 years. And this is 44, and the key to this issue is, and it's by one of my favorite writers of Batman. And I'm gonna say this because this series by him is amazing, especially Bat Family stuff. It encompasses a lot, and this guy has some passion for the characters because he nails it in emotion and personality and responses. It's just really good. His name is Scott Beatty, and like I said, Roger Robinson is the artist. And this one focused on a social worker going after Bruce Wayne for the death of Jason Todd and his negligence in past children that he's raised. So he's raising questions that nobody else has raised, and he's going after him with a lot of information. And Bruce has to fend that guy off. And it's really interesting story that they've been building up to this issue for like 5 issues. But well, the other thing Scott Beatty does really well is he does the Claremont technique where he's got like a main thread and he's got like multiple other threads that are being moved along, and then they become the major thread. And yeah, it's just really good story. This is becoming one of my favorites. I'm gonna wrap this up soon because I only have 45 through 55 to read, and then I read the rest of the series, so and all the beginning before that. So I got about a I don't know a dozen so books left to finish that series up, and really want to see how Knight's Past ends. Fathers and sons and sidekicks, because it is the conclusion to this story. So I'm sure he's gonna pull some other threads where we link into the next story arc. Scott Beatty gets us through issue 50, and then I think he leaves, and A.G. Lieberman takes over. And I remember liking his work too, at least what I've read. So, yeah, that was Batman Gotham Knights, and next up is Bloodshot Reborn. This is an interesting 6 through 8. I read this for the Valiant podcast, which we recorded and released already. It was a DC Noise slash Valiant podcast. It was released on both feeds because it was part DC and part Valiant, and we just decided to combine it into an episode and put it out on both feeds. It was with me, Daryl, and Chris Campbell, who are the Valiant podcast. And this series has just been really good. It's been building on me. I used to think it was, a 4 out of 5, but now I'm reading more into it. It's a 5 out of 5, and I'm absolutely loving it. I loved 7 so much, and I did something that I never do. We get preview podcasts or preview issues with the watermarks and PDFs and from the Valiant because we have the Valiant podcast, and I never ask for those because I don't like to read them. They have watermarks, they're distracting. I hate digital, I hate to read on the computer, it's not relaxing in my eyes. But when I read 7 and it ended like that, I was like, guys, can you please send me 8 immediately, please? Because I want to finish this, I want to read this, I want to see what happens. I was so hungry for that issue, and luckily I was able to read it, even though it was released this week. I do want to reread it in paper, though, just like Eternal Warrior, because I can't tell you why. I can't tell you how bizarre it is. I mean, I can tell you it's a bizarre thing to have, but there's something about my reading and my eyes and that I'd rather read paper. It's so much more pleasing, and I actually enjoy it more than a digital copy. And the last one, phenomenal issue of Tokyo Ghost, Image Comics, Rick Remender, and Sean Murphy. Oh my God, Sean Murphy art is so good. And this is post-apocalyptic where technology has just overcome the world, and you get the backstory between the main female character and the boyfriend who's kind of lost in technology, and you see where she came from and why she's different than most people that get absorbed by technology and lose sight of their personality and their surroundings and everything. But she was raised by parents that one taught her to go outside and to learn stuff and try to stay away from the tech and be her own person, which she taught to her boyfriend later on. But he got lost in it because of things. And it has the mom, who's the opposite extreme. She's plugged in all the time, 24/7, into the interweb, and she's always watching porn. She's always got all these like things on her clitoris and electronic clamps on her nipples, and she's a crazy woman. And it's got like a father who's more like down to earth and a mother who's so absorbed into the technology, and then you have this daughter who's somewhere in between, but she knows she wants to be like her father. Really good post-apocalyptic storytelling in a world and a reality that is very, very real. Certain aspects of it where people could be lost and lose sight of what's around them just because they're plugged into their phone 24/7. And you could see in the future where phones might not even be obsolete, that you get like this chip in your brain or something that you're just always hooked up to the internet. Scary as shit, but that's what this world is like. Hooked up to a matrix or something. But Tokyo Ghost is my top 5 out of 5. I'm gonna reread the top 5 out of 5 books again, just because they're 5 out of 5s. We had Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire, number 4. Book of Death, Fall of Exo Man of War, number 1. Jonah Hex, Volume 2, 4 through 5. 1872, number 4. Batman Gotham Knights, number 44. Bloodshot Reborn, number 6 through 8. And Tokyo Ghost, number 2. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Feel free to send me email. I will answer you back, or read them on the episodes. I have gotten some good feedback lately that people are enjoying it. It's probably not as popular as a lot of my other shows, but it's got a following and people do enjoy it. So I'm going to continue doing it at least for the foreseeable future, until interest wanes at least. But I always do rank my books. Like, this is just me talking through it. Whatever I do already, it's just me walking through it, so it's not too much of a big deal. And I do go off on a lot of tangents because my mind remembers things that I read and wants to discuss some of the things and the book that I really enjoyed, rather than just going through the list. But please send me email at mike@comicbooknoise.com. And the other thing you could send, at mike@comicbooknoise. The other thing you could say is on Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch. That's my handle. You can also go to Facebook and search for Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button and follow all the episode threads there. Comment there, or you can go to the website at geekbrunchpodcast.com and see the episode threads and leave comments there. I'd appreciate any feedback. If you could leave an iTunes review, there aren't any right now for this. The way you would do it is search for Geek Brunch Podcast, leave a comment there and a rating. And when you put a comment, say this is for Mike M's Weekly Reads, I would really appreciate it. That's the only the other thing that you could do to help the show is, when it comes out, if you enjoy it, not just like it, but if you could share it on social media, then other people who follow you could see it and see if they could get listeners, based on you retweeting it. So that would help a lot too. So thank you for listening. Really appreciate the listeners that do listen to it. And we'll be back next week, probably with a really short stack, as a lot has gone on and I'm getting ready for the holiday, and I didn't get a lot to read. And I was in the DC mood, so I read a lot of DC. But we'll see you next time on Mike M's Weekly Reads. Also, let you know, there were 3 episodes, well, 2 episodes released for DC Noise recently. There was the one with the Valiant crossover with me, Chris Campbell, and Daryl Taylor. Had some really interesting discussion about DC and Valiant Comics and the state of the industry. And you should check that out. There's a Geek Brunch episode with me and Bill, where we talk a lot about 351 or 451 Media and a lot of other books that we really enjoyed, including Karnak and such. and talk about movies and TV that we watched. Geek Brunch, that new episode is just released. That's on the same feed as this one. And I have upcoming ones that are recorded. I have a episode of Retrocast that should be released on the weekend soon. And I have two episodes of DC Noise with me, Daryl, and Keith, which it's hard for us to all get together anymore, but it was a 4-hour episode, so I'm going to break it up into two. And it has a logical breaking point because of the internet connection. I dropped on one of them, so I'm just going to release one and then let the other one go. And the second one's going to be much longer than the first. But thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.